Unlock your Bible. Discover the true meaning of life. Learn the cause of world problems and the astounding solution. Prove for yourself what the future holds. In the Trumpet Literature Library, you will find answers to life's most important questions. Explore these vital titles on Trumpet Bookshelf.
Welcome to Trumpet Bookshelf. I'm Grant Turgeon, and today we have with us a very special guest, Philadelphia Church of God music director Ryan Malone. Thanks so much for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And of course, we're having you today because we just covered your new booklet, How God Values Music. Like I said last week, it just has a lot of wow moments in it. And I was even just telling you before the show, just the cover is beautiful. It's got like a heavenly harp with the seven strings, and you can even see through the harp to look at the stars.
Right. It's so inspiring. It really gives you well, you can judge this book by its cover, I suppose.
Exactly. Yeah, it really does stand out among all the literature pieces of literature that we have at thetrumpet.com. I just thought maybe we'd start today by just showing that you know this subject really well. You could just talk to us a little bit about your background in music.
Well, one of my earliest memories, apparently I was three, my parents said, I remember really wanting this drum set that I saw on a shelf in a toy section of a store, and my parents eventually got it for me as a gift, and that's all I remember. But when my mom fills in the rest of the details was that she noticed that I was keeping time with the radio and doing a lot of relatively rhythmic things for a three-year-old. So she and my dad said that they wanted to develop what talent there might be there. And I always remember just having a love of music and a passion for music. My dad was an amateur musician, and my mom had enough music literacy to start me off in a piano method book and take me through the first year and just, you know, point to the pages and say, here, do this, and this is where the notes are. And then after that, moved on to a community teacher, and then got pretty serious in my teen years about it because I saw where it was going.
Wow. So that's pretty early on. It sounds like your parents had a pretty big part in that, just being discerning and noticing that you had an inclination toward that.
Absolutely. They have all the credit for that they saw what they saw was a talent, and they had heard that, you know, when your child has something like that, you need to develop it. And so they felt a spiritual obligation to do that. That was what was motivating it. So I'm very, very appreciative.
And one of the things that really stood out to me about this booklet was just how there is one thing about being, maybe having music as a gift, but to develop it is also the other part of it. And you talked about how music and science and math are all intertwined. It's not like, oh, I'm either an artsy person or I'm a scientific mind. Those things go together, and you could really be an expert at any one of them without having to necessarily exclude something else.
Absolutely. Music really does combine a lot of those elements of our physical universe. And so there's math, there's science, there's muscle memory, you know, athletic elements of music practice. And yeah, it's all incredibly beneficial to the mind and how it brings together all these different cognitive functions. So yeah, you can't really just put it in a little bitty corner or a box or something.
Right now during Philadelphia Youth Camp, you're also the speech instructor for 132 campers. Could you just tell us some of the similarities there between public speaking and performing music?
That is a really cool question to think about, the similarities between, say, speaking in public and performing music. Of course, there's performance element, which would be the pretty obvious one, of how to maintain your composure and to communicate in a way that makes people feel comfortable, makes them feel like you're giving to them, and that, you know, that you're doing that. But also there's some subtle comparisons, I think, that are really interesting to think about, and that is that both disciplines are communicating something. I mean, in public speaking, you're communicating words and, you know, sentences and paragraphs and that type of thing. But in music, it really isn't that much different, in the sense that you're communicating in musical phrases. And just like when we listen to a speaker, we predict what we think they're going to say next, and we follow their train of thought. Well, in music, the audience is doing a similar amount of predicting, where they think a phrase is going to go, where they think a note will resolve. And just as in public speaking, there are times when the speaker can say something unexpected, or a sentence can end on a different word, and either it can create surprise or shock or even laughter from being not predictable, but as they say, post-dictable, where after you hear it, you think, oh, well, oh, that makes sense, but wow, I wasn't expecting that. Music does the same thing. And so I think that's your question actually is a comparison that I think more people could make with the difference between, or the similarities in communicating musically and verbally.
Right, and obviously the thing I was probably thinking of was just the idea of maybe dealing with nerves, being in front of people.
Right.
There's definitely an aspect of stepping out of your comfort zone, which is something you've also talked about quite a lot. But these are really just different ways of human beings expressing themselves, which animals could never do. It's something that really does set us apart from all the animals. And like you said in the booklet, that's a miracle.
It is. And this specific example is not in the booklet, but I really wanted to – it just came to mind when you said that. I thought, I really want to say this. I saw a video of a cat dealing with a metronome, and a metronome that clicks back and forth with a hand ticking back and forth. And human beings have the amazing ability to – when we hear a beat, we can tap along. I mean, think about that. That's a miracle. We don't tap slightly late and then slightly late the next beat. We tap exactly with the beat because there's a part of our brain that knows how to predict that beat. I saw this cat looking at this metronome, kept trying to reach out and swipe the arm that was, flopping back and forth. And I thought, well, that cat, certainly after a couple of beats, it could catch on when it's going to be coming back at him. But it couldn't. So, I mean, it really is a human element or an aspect of our human spirit that we can even predict a beat and follow a beat and that type of thing that a cat can't do.
Yeah, that's definitely a humorous comparison between humans and animals. Like, my daughter is 2 years old, and anytime she hears music, she's asking us if she can hop off the couch and start dancing along. She can easily keep the beat. She's been able to do that from well before she turned two as well. And meanwhile, a cat sees that and is like, I need to attack that thing. It's moving. And so there's something out of the ordinary here. There's something wrong.
Right.
So pretty big difference there. And it really is just a blessing to be able to understand music like that. Obviously, you got to put together this booklet. What would you say your favorite part was?
Well, I think it sort of climaxes in, and without giving away too much, but I guess, you talked about the last chapter last time. It was really that last chapter talking about the importance of music and looking at this temple in the Bible that's prophetic, and it hasn't been built yet. And you just compare the square footage of everything on that temple campus, and the amount of real estate devoted to the singing rooms just is stunning to me. That, along with the point it makes in here about how there's so many activities we do in this life that teach us character traits that we can take over into the next life. But music is something that actually transfers in an exact way over into the next, into the spirit realm, that there's no sort of type of it. It is, music's happening in the spirit realm, music's happening in the human realm. And I think that really shows its importance, and that excites me as a musician. That makes it my favorite part, I guess. Anything that shows how important it is that, what I'm doing, for my life.
And you mentioned in the booklet as well how music, or at least the ability to produce music, has existed for as long as God has, which is forever. So this is obviously a much more important subject than a lot of people think of it as. I mean, in schools, a lot of the time, it just seems to be like an extracurricular or an elective course. Why would you say that music should definitely be like a core class?
Well, the points that I just made about its future and its connection for us to the spiritual, and then what you said even just about its origins, I mean, that was another shocking thing as I looked at that. And that, well, there's a verse that talks about God singing. I thought, well, God doesn't have a beginning, and well, his voice would have been with him the whole time, and so where did music begin? And so you could say that at least the capacity for music, if not music itself, has eternally existed as well, because it's a godly endeavor. And so, I mean, even that just shows that the more we can understand about this, well, as I like to call it, a language, or this form of communication, it really does help us understand the mind of God better. And so there's a spiritual component to why it's important, why I believe God would have made sure it was there with our first parents in the Garden of Eden, which I think there's biblical evidence for, as the booklet points out. And so that really stresses its importance of itself. You know, all these studies that people try to do with music, they send them to me, and I love that. But all these studies are saying, well, here's how important music is because here's how they help these other subjects. And it's like, well, it's actually of its own value important. And, you know, wouldn't that be ridiculous if I said, hey, math's important because music does this to it or whatever. So if you reverse it, it seems silly. But it has its own intrinsic value, which I think is fantastic.
Another great part about this booklet, in my opinion, was just specifically the first paragraph of every chapter. And in one of those chapters, you mentioned one of your music professors in college who would challenge that assumption that just because we've been going on for thousands of years, that music is automatically progressing. You basically dispelled that notion that music is automatically better today than it's ever been. There's a lot of nuance to music that has existed for thousands of years. In fact, God might have even just had to reveal certain aspects of it from the very start. Sure. So that was part of the booklet that surprised me. Probably there was less material that could have possibly surprised you, but if there were any, what were there for you?
Well, that point. Speaking to that point, I think that's a really good point that he made. This music professor in a public university, when so much of their thinking is based on evolutionary thought, that well, we're just developing and developing and developing. Now, technology gets better. I mean, the piano today is better than the piano 100 years ago. But in terms of the core components of music, that certainly, I believe, was very advanced in biblical times. That was one of the things that I was shocked with, or really pleasantly surprised to see the biblical evidence as you study into that, how intricate it was. I also think another, I guess, shocking moment for me, or something that really stood out as an aha moment, was that when God works with a group of people, they impact the world artistically. And it's seen in the Bible. It's in Bible history. It's in secular history. And that's just really shocking in a world where there weren't CDs, there weren't radios, there weren't, you know, like on page 45 of the booklet, it talks about David, the song they sang about David when he went into Philistine territory. They say, oh yeah, you're the guy they wrote that song about. And I'm like, well, how did they know that? I mean, we look at it through Western eyes and we think, oh, well, so someone in Canada knows about a song we did in America, you know, in the U.S., that's not a big deal. But right. Back then, you know, you say someone in a neighboring state hearing about a song, if not even hearing the song itself, that really shows the impact that culture had. So that was a shocking moment. There are several wow surprises in the booklet about music's importance. I think there's some wow moments when you see the connection between the Hebrew culture and the Celtic culture. I think that's another blockbuster moment in the booklet. People can digest and look into that.
Well, those are some really outstanding points. I think the part that my wife was most impressed about, I mentioned last week, she basically circled an entire paragraph and then put the word wow around the whole thing because she was pretty excited about it. It was basically about the harmony of the spheres and how the entire universe is basically aligned musically. And that can be maybe difficult for a beginner to understand. How would you describe that idea?
Okay. Musical pitches are basically numbers. It's a number of vibrations per second. And so harmony is a numeric relationship. And I guess in the simplest terms, and this goes back to ancient times, that there were people who knew, and again, I believe it was people who God had worked with, knew that the numbers that you saw in the solar system, you know, in the heavens, they were the same ratios of the harmonic relationship between the pitches that we find most pleasing. And what we find most pleasing, it's not an arbitrary, well, you were just born thinking that's or you were conditioned since birth to think those pitches sound good together. There's psychological proof that our minds take it a certain way and enjoy it a certain way, and those numbers can be found in creation, in the arms of the Milky Way galaxy, and in the arms of the, or in the in the dial of a sunflower, or in, you know, or in the way the solar system's put together. All of it's there because, well, it's God's fingerprint, and it's his authorship that you can see in all these different aspects of nature.
And there is part of that section that even mentioned, you know, well, is the universe maybe a little bit out of tune? And so you pointed to the fact that the universe is actually groaning and waiting for sons of God to fix it. So as beautiful as the universe is, it could actually get even more perfect. We could clean it up and fix it after the damage that has been done.
Right. Well, I think any amateur student of astronomy would know that, well, you can see that it's beautiful. There's something outstandingly stellar about it. But then also you can see, well, there's so much potential that's not being realized. The same would be true of the ratios and the frequencies that are being emitted. Understanding too that, you know, God, of course, can, he's outside of time. So these orbits, though we wouldn't detect them as pitch, well, if 1,000 years is like a day, well, then those orbits all of a sudden take on musical significance. It's a really deep concept to mull around,
and it's a really exciting one to think about. And so there, I like how the booklet also basically progresses through different epochs of time. It starts with God and it goes through all of the Old Testament and the New Testament up to today and even beyond. Maybe we could just briefly hit some highlights from each of those different eras.
Absolutely. Well, we talked about the origins of music, you know, in God's realm, and then what he did in Eden, that's covered in the book. And then I love the part where, you know, you see all these musicians that David had access to, and the booklet even points out how the schools of Samuel had so much to do with that. Because if you look at Samuel's time, it said there was no open vision. There was a big dearth when it came to, you know, the spiritual things. And then, yet, you know, fast forward about 100 years later at the end of David's life, and you have 4,000 Levites who were used to serve God. There was a staff of 288 Levites who were serving at the tabernacle. And then going into the temple service, you know, when Solomon built that first temple, that's an astounding moment in history. 120 trumpets sounding at this ceremony. And
just sheer quantity.
you can only imagine what that sounded like. And so there's those moments. I think Nehemiah and the way he reacted to what was going on when the musicians were kicked out of the temple. He had left Jerusalem for a while and came back and said, "What's going on? We need to set this right." So it wasn't just Sabbath breaking that he was upset with. There was a whole order that had been upset, and I think that's a really interesting moment. Of course, Jeremiah and how God used him to preserve the legacy of the throne culture. And taking that into the British Isles and that type of thing. That's all really fascinating. Getting into the New Testament and talking about, well, now we're talking about a spiritual nation, and the more righteousness there is within a group of people, then the more the arts actually flourish. You know, and you can see that's the principle behind it all. So I love seeing that progression, and then seeing what God is doing here, you know, with his church in these days is just remarkable, and you can see the correlation.
And definitely these biblical heroes, these musical pioneers in the Bible followed God's example really well too, because, you know, David had those 4,000 musician priests, but God had he had basically an angelic choir of 100 million, right?
Right, in Revelation says that.
So it really seems like the men best following God's example even went big with it. They just produced music on a massive scale that it would be even hard to just imagine reproducing today.
Right.
And then obviously the quality, basically receiving revelation directly from God and building their music on that foundation. And it's always been that way throughout history. Everyone who follows God seems like they're musically inclined. And then, like you said in the booklet, when it's not going well, it's almost like either there's just silence in the nation, or maybe it's just all kinds of wrong music
that, worth recording,
that God doesn't bother talking about. Exactly.
Right. Well, and even that, what you mentioned about the quality, I tell you, that drives me into thinking about, well, this is what God has done in his throne room. Well, I better get good at it. You know, it's not about human vanity. It's not just about perfection for perfection's sake. It's about I've got a pretty big number of angels to live up to if I'm going to produce something that's going to be of a godly quality. And I try to instill that in the people I teach, because you know it's easy to think, well, you don't want to get certain things out of balance, and of course you don't want to wear yourself out in the wrong way and that type of thing. But boy, we have quite a standard to live up to, and that's what we try to stress.
Definitely, and because we have to keep that standard in mind, it's also important to get rid of certain misconceptions we might have about music. I believe I alluded to one earlier, but could you think of maybe a big one that we definitely need to guard against?
I'm glad you ased that. There is a misconception, I think, about music, and that is you either have it or you don't in terms of your ability. Now, I do believe, and there have been studies to show this, that your brain wires itself for certain activities by certain ages, and there is a too late, you know, in terms of like your neurological construct. But I think that goes to the argument of why it's so important to get it to our young people early. But if you know, it's like a language, and I think that, you know, you could say, well, if you never learned how to speak French, well, it's not like you can never learn how to speak French. I mean, you might not get all the exact nasal vowels and things like that, but you can get pretty close. And then take that metaphor into kind of further, you say, well, if a kid grew up and the parents just spoke French, well, the kid doesn't think anything about it. He just speaks French. So I think if we just there is a little bit to, well, you could be too late to the game in some ways. But this idea that you either have it or you don't. Well, look, if we just put people in a musical environment, their voices are going to start working that way. You know, if they're used to moving their legs a certain way, they're going to dance. This type of thing can just be bred into the family, and you can see that's how God does it. Now, of course, He had family specialize. And when you needed a big gig in the Old Testament, well, then call the Levites, because that was in the family. It was so ensconced in the family lifestyle. But also in Solomon's coronation, it says all the, you know, people were out there piping with pipes. So it wasn't just this exclusive thing that only one family did. So there's a culture that can be bred into the family. I think that's something that can be stressed a little bit more.
And we can't underestimate the value of hard work. It's not just you were tapping your foot as a child, and then here you are today. There's a lot of work that went into it. I believe a lot of piano camps when you were a teenager, too.
So much practice.
Yeah.
Mr. Armstrong was right when he said it was 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration. I say that's like if you want something that's $100 and you say, well, I have one, you know, like you still need 99 more. So this idea that, well, I think the gift that my parents might have seen in me, it might have frankly just been a love that I had for this, what was that, what was happening on the radio, and I wanted to be a part of it. And so you can call that talent, you can call that just a strong inclination, but that was 1% of it. It has to be cultivated. You know, just because a kid grows up in a French house doesn't mean he's going to be a French poet, you know, that type of thing. So it certainly takes a lot of work, and when I'm done here, I'm going to go practice.
That's amazing. It never stops.
That's right.
Well, we have a few minutes left to maybe just get practical here. What would you say to the listener as to the best kinds of music that they should listen to, or maybe listening habits that they should develop so that they can reach God's standard in this area?
That's a great question. The booklet actually, it doesn't get too specific about kinds of music, and it does that on purpose because I think there's quality music in so many different forms. There are two implied kinds of music that the booklet talks about. Well, it doesn't just imply them as being bad, but one was the religious music of ancient times that was meant to sort of put people in a certain emotional state or something, or confusing emotion with spirituality. I guess this sort of speaks to the lyrics, but it's easy to hear something that's a beautiful tune and say the lyrics sound religious even, and this sort of just puts you in this feeling of like, well, now I feel spiritual, but yet you've just been worked up into an emotion. That's I wouldn't say there's maybe something like theoretically wrong with the music itself, but that's something to certainly be on guard against, is that it's not just about, well, this emotion equals a spiritual experience. And then there's that one section in the booklet where, you know, Moses and Joshua are coming down from Sinai, and everyone's going crazy with the golden calf, and Joshua says, it sounds like war.
Right.
And Moses says, no, I think that's music. and or something to that effect. And I think that that speaks to, well, I think we would certainly want to avoid music that that could be misconstrued as, well, there's this violent spirit to it, or there's this unhinged kind of aspect that which just goes beyond just what would be healthy expression of emotion and passion. And so there's those things, and then everything else, I think you could find quality music in everything. Of course, you always have to watch out for the spirit of the music, the lyrics, of course, you know, that they gel with God's law, if, you know, if there's lyrics. Otherwise, I think the you know, again, the quality can be found in everything. It doesn't always have to be the highest quality music, even just to be acceptable. I don't want that to be the impression from the booklet. Just like not every meal that I eat is going to be a gourmet meal. And sometimes there's certain kinds of beverages that you would drink at some times and certain kinds of beverages you wouldn't drink at other times. Music's the same way. There's and that's more like your, I guess, your emotional diet. You would just watch for the balance in your diet and say, well, I need this now, or this probably isn't the best thing for me right now. I can do this instead. This would be better.
And we do have some outstanding musical resources available at pcg.church. And even if you just look at our concert series here at Herbert W. Armstrong College and with the Cultural Foundation, it's not just classical music, like always say.
The variety.
It's pretty wide range of music that is acceptable and really does showcase the best of the human spirit.
Right. Yeah, Leonard Bernstein said, well, it's not classical music and everything else. There's good music and there's bad music. And he meant good music can be in a lot of different styles, you know, and like for in the concert series, you can have tango, tango nuevo, and you can have jazz, and you can have these, you know, folk kinds of music and symphonic, and that, yeah, there's quality in everything.
Well, thank you so much, Mr. Malone, for coming on the show today.
Absolutely.
We've been speaking with PCG Music Director Ryan Malone, and we've been talking a lot about his new booklet, How God Values Music. It actually came out about 7 months ago, and it's available for free at thetrumpet.com. Thanks so much for listening today. I'm Grant Turgeon. This has been Trumpet Bookshelf.
You've been listening to Trumpet Bookshelf. Please email your thoughts to comments at kpcg.fm. Listen for new episodes every Friday at 10 a.m. Central Time.